You're listening to the Deal Farm Podcast with Ken Corsini. Educating, inspiring, and connecting you to real estate deals. And now, your host, Ken Corsini.
Hey, this is Ken Corsini with The Deal Farm. On today's Best Deal Ever episode, I've got Nathan Brooks. Nathan, how you doing?
I'm great, Ken. Thanks so much, man. Thanks awesome. For having me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's an exciting day.
So Nathan is actually out of Kansas City, and he's like me and really like a lot of us who do a little bit of everything. So he's got a portfolio of single family homes. He does some fix and flips. He also sells turnkey. He partners with people on deals. But Nathan, I'd love to know how you got started in real estate.
That is a great question. I was sitting with my wife enjoying a beverage, overheard a guy chatting about real estate and being a contractor. And literally a couple weeks later, thought I, you know, of course, knew everything about real estate and had a new business partner. And the first day I bought a house, I bought two. And it just only went downhill from there.
So just overhearing a conversation motivated you enough to go out there and buy two houses?
With this guy.
With the guy that you overheard. Oh, that's funny. You're like, I want in. Let me in.
Yeah, it's not the way to do it.
So how many years ago was that?
This was like 2006 or so. So yeah, like 8-9 years ago.
Okay.
2005, 2006. I don't remember exactly, but I try to forget it, I think. But it haunts me.
So I take it those first two houses did not go well?
No, did not go well at all. Bad business partner, bad bank, bad deal, bad everything. Oh, so we bought them. They were, of course, in my name. And the guy basically showed up for Friday for his paycheck and stopped. All of a sudden just stopped showing up to work except for Friday to try to get more money out of me. Meanwhile, you know, we hold them for forever. Market starts tanking. And, you know, I don't have occupiable properties and I know nothing about flipping a house. And, you know, long story short, we basically, over that period of time, continue to buy other houses. And the whole thing kind of unravels. And we ended up filing for bankruptcy and losing every house that we owned. And
oh, man. Really bad story. I didn't realize we were going there. That's horrible.
Yeah, we filed for bankruptcy and had a miscarriage in the same week.
Nathan, oh my gosh.
And so yeah, it was not. It was a horrible time for sure.
Oh, and you stuck it out. You decided to stay in real estate after that.
I know I have to ask myself that same question. But you know, my wife and I, after we were able to kind of pick up the pieces and look back at it and say, you know, we went through all of this horrible stuff and through that had an education, obviously. And so do we want to embrace it and own it and you know, implement the things that we missed? Or do we want to, you know, have gone through and suffered and then just leave it? And so, I'm a driven guy and I have real belief in owning the mistakes and you know, refining and redoing. So that's what we did.
Wow. And kudos to you guys for going through something like that and having the strength and the wherewithal to put it behind you and jump right back into real estate again. So what did that look like for you guys? I mean, after you'd filed for bankruptcy, it really sort of took your licks. How did you then reapproach real estate?
Well, we, about 12 months later, I had gone through, I think it was seriously like 27 no's from private lenders, banks, and wherever, to try to find, because we basically changed everything, the way that we did our finances, the way we did our banking, or our, you know, savings, and so, we just went through one after another of people asking, you know, people would be interested for to finance or, you know, partner or whatever. And so I happened to find a guy in Florida where I lived at the time who was on Craigslist of all places, who has had some places for rent, and I looked at his business and it looked incredible. And down the line, looking back now, it's just it's pretty awesome. But I took him to lunch, and come to find out, owned, you know, hundreds of houses, flipped hundreds of houses, had thousands under his management company, and he became my first private lender after a lot of time in that relationship.
And so you jumped in buying like buying holds, or were you fixing and flipping right out of the gates?
It was very small, very low loan to value rental houses. So those are buy and holds, and that particular person, you know, funded several of them for me, and it still to this day does.
Wow. Oh, so you still have that private money on those houses?
One of them, yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yep, I still own that house.
And those are in Florida?
They're all here in Kansas City. Okay. Even from Florida, I was just really passionate about this market and passionate about, you know, knowing the areas and knowing the great places to buy them. So
I gotcha. Mm-hmm. So you start building up a portfolio from there of rental properties, and then I guess how did you transition into turnkey and the fix and flips?
It was a kind of a natural progression. So as we got more confident, we made, you know, some more capital, made more relationships, and obviously also just from a standpoint of showing people we could execute, that we developed other relationships, and out of that, just kind of naturally, we look for other avenues for exit strategy and just other kind of legs of the stool, if you will.
Sure. Well, that seems like I know a lot of guys where that's sort of a natural progression is if you've started up building a rental portfolio and at some point you want to start maybe thinning it out a little bit, it's a natural fit to maybe go turnkey, because in it you've got these deals that are already put together and you just start selling them off to investors. You're sort of cashing out some of your portfolio. Is that sort of what happened with you?
Exactly. That's absolutely true. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, it's like any of us, when you're in the business and you're looking at houses, even if you're really only looking at them from a standpoint of, hey, I'm going to portfolio these things, you start running across deals that don't necessarily make sense for your portfolio, but you're like, man, these spreads are nice. Maybe I should start thinking about fixing and flipping this. And next thing you're buying and you're selling and you're getting some pretty nice licks in the process.
Well, that's absolutely true. And you kind of develop the process of what does this, you know, little rental house kind of rehab look like versus like the house that we have permits that were just permitted or accepted by the city on a large second story addition on a house that's in a cool, you know, big time neighborhood. So
nice.
When you go from those kind of projects and be able to say, you know, I can understand it, I can execute it, I can make money with it, you know, and then obviously looking at your risk reward and also how do I get out of this deal? So
yes, having that plan B of, okay, if this thing doesn't sell, what's my plan B?
Yep, exactly.
Totally. You know, what's interesting too is we haven't to date, I mean, we've done hundreds of properties here in Atlanta, but we've never added a second story. We've never needed to. We've added a little bit of square footage off the back, and we've done new construction, but I've never actually like taken the roof off and gone up with a house. But just recently I've thought about it because there's been some pretty good opportunities in town. Mm-hmm. Have you done a handful of those? What's that like?
I have not. I've done like the full-on gut job in the inside on, you know, $100,000 remodel kind of deal. But this is the first one. So I wish I could tell you.
Yeah. We'll do a follow-up podcast in a couple months. You can tell me how it went.
Yeah, I'd love to. And we can show some pictures and have a little video or whatever to for people to see it too. But yeah, it's a 12 or 1300 square foot house, and it'll be by far the biggest and kind of best deal. It's, you know, like a 185 purchase at 130, 140 in the rehab and about a 450, 500.
Nice.
House. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. See, those opportunities they appear to be in town. And like I said, I just haven't capitalized on them yet, but I got a really solid builder on my team. I think I just need to bite the bullet and just do one and see how it works out. And then, you know, it might be a great little niche.
The interesting thing in that process has been the skill of my architect and just how good he was to be able to set us up with the city, set us up with the builder, and put us in a position where we have a house that's really attractive and that really got the attention of the city through that process, and that they're really excited about it. And this house is a dog, so people in the neighborhood are already fired up. So the rehabs in there are like crazy, and they're also tearing down houses in there and building new builds that are well into the millions. So it's a really good spot.
Yeah. Where we are. If you can find that one of the last houses on a street to transition, it's almost always a sure thing if you do it right.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So you're full-time, right? Full-time real estate investor?
Yeah, full-time.
When you guys got back into it, was it the same thing? Just went full-time? We're committed to doing this?
You know, for some time, I've actually also been a worship leader at a church and spent a lot of time working a lot of hours in both arenas, and actually just really recently transitioned to full-time doing that and kind of fighting my passion in music and passion in real estate. But I continue to have a lot of success, and we are growing just so exponentially fast that I couldn't fight it anymore. And so, you know, jumped in full time, and then, you know, building our team within that real estate company also.
Yeah, that's awesome. It is. Once your business starts growing, a lot of guys kind of dip their toes in the water first while they're working a full time job. And yeah, you start having some success, you start getting some big paydays. It's tough not to just transition to have all your attention in real estate. I totally get that.
And it was the end goal all along, so I could see it. I just, you know, I wanted to, my wife stays home with our kids, and, you know, so it's just one of those things as I could watch. And my big driver in my life was the passive income side. And, you know, within a few months, we'll have our whole monthly, you know, expenses and budget covered by our passive income. And so that was kind of the big ticket.
Nice. And that's just your portfolio. So what do you even know the count you've got in your single family rental portfolio?
I'm not sure. We buy them and sell them so often. Sometimes it's hard to keep them track. It's in a spreadsheet, I promise.
You sound like me, man. It's hilarious. I mean, I'll have a portfolio at any given point in time, but there's so many houses coming and going off of that portfolio, like on a given month, that it's hard to know where you're at.
I can tell you this. We closed on one today. We closed on one on Monday of this week. We closed on another one that's a sell on this coming Monday, and we have another one closing on Friday next week. So
nice.
Yeah.
Lots of moving and shaking. That's a good thing.
Yes, absolutely.
So let's talk about, with all this experience and all the different types of deals you've done, is there one to you that stands out that we could talk about maybe as your best deal ever?
Well, there's certainly one that comes to mind. We bought it just close to the beginning of the year, and we actually went through some challenges on it too. The interesting thing about it was I had found some success putting out some kind of personal messages and personal requests for people to send, people who need to sell houses, on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And so this particular lead came through Facebook, and was somebody that had tenants in their house, and this is one I get a lot. I bet you do too, Ken, that we're landlords by default. We want out. We, you know, help me get out of this house.
Totally.
You know? And so, and we always look for a win-win. We always want to do the right thing with the seller. And so, you know, I kind of went through and just gave him, met the tenants, who were very nice. And we, you know, made an offer the next day and accepted our offer, and boom, we were in the deal.
And let me get this straight. This is you found this guy through Facebook?
Yep.
So what did that look like? Did you just put a kind of just a generic posting on your Facebook, said, hey, if anybody's looking to sell, you're tired of landlording sort of message? Or,
well, you know, typically I'll do a few different kind of posts. So some will be something, you know, very similar to that. Some will be like, you know, like today, for instance, I'll put something out there like, we closed on another house today, exclamation. You know, I'm looking forward another three houses to close by the end of the month. Who do you know who needs to sell? So in that situation, you've given somebody a real concrete number, like, I could be one of three people. Instead of, hey, we buy houses. Okay, well, what does that mean? Hey, we want to buy three houses in the next 3 weeks, and we're looking for this. And so I think in the last few weeks, I've probably gotten four, five, or six leads off of Facebook.
Wow, man, that's crazy. Because, you know, I do know of some guys that are using Facebook advertising and they're boosting those types of posts, but you didn't even spend any money. This just went out to your network of people and you were getting leads off of it. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, and you know, there's a great way to compound that effort too. It's called Hootsuite. And it's, you can basically, if you put your social media, you can put all your profiles in. I think up to 3 is free. And then I went ahead and paid for it because I have a million LinkedIn accounts and all that stuff. So you can put your social media line in that, and then it'll go out to all the different ones that you set up. So Facebook and Twitter and Instagram or whatever. So it's pretty neat.
Oh, that's awesome. How do you spell that? How do you spell Hootsuite?
I believe it's HOOTSUITE, Hootsuite.
Man, that's awesome. That's a great tip. You know what? We'll put that in the show notes for folks with a link to Hootsuite. As you know, I think I've heard of that. They basically aggregate your social media profiles, and I guess you can just post to all of them with one post. Is that sort of the idea?
Yeah, so yeah, exactly.
You get it out to everybody. That's awesome.
And you can also, because I'm always looking, I'm a huge Timothy Ferris fan, and I'm always looking for ways to cut my time and effort down into something. So you can literally spend, like, say, I'm going to block out 30 minutes a time, I'm going to write 50 posts, and you can actually do that and save them all in there and then schedule them out to post over the course of that week.
Oh man, that's killer.
Yeah, it's pretty killer.
That's worth the cost of admission right there.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Exactly.
All right. So you get this lead. It's a disgruntled landlord. You buy the house. What happened from there?
Okay. Well, we went in, we really like the add value, and we look for that particularly in all of those fix and flips where we have a place where we can kind of raise the ceiling of what our after repair value is by making, you know, the improvements. So in this house, we totally gutted basically the first floor, put whole new hardwoods to the whole thing, and, you know, the granite, and we did cool herringbone travertine backsplash, and just a really neat, you know, right contemporary of what's going on in our market. And a few things, like had some issues with the painters, and it took a month and a half longer than expected, and we went over budget by about $5,000 or $6,000. But in the end of the day, we made probably $10,000 or $15,000 more than what we thought we would make on the deal.
Wow.
Because of the improvements that we made.
Killer.
Yeah.
So roundabout, you bought it for what are stuff selling in Kansas City for in this price point?
This was a pretty decent neighborhood. We were one of the smaller houses in the area. I want to say we roughly bought it for about 100 or just over. Maybe it was 105.
Okay.
And I think we had 45 in it, and it sold in 7 days with 5 offers, 5,000 over list price for 214.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's killer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Perfect. I mean, perfect timing. I mean, it just happened to be that there was a renter in there, and I guess you were able to boot out the renter?
They were very cooperative. It wasn't anything like where we had to do cash for keys or anything like that. They had just had a certain period of time that they needed to get out, and I think they were moving anyway, and it was like the second or third tenants that they'd had, that the owner had had in, you know, very short period of time. And so he was just like, I keep eating all these costs and paying mortgage payment and all this stuff. And so, you know, it was just definitely a win-win situation for everybody in the deal.
Well, there's no doubt that the majority of our off-market deals come from landlords that are disgruntled. And for some reason, when they just sort of get down mentally on a house, they completely lose sight of the opportunity that they're sitting on. Like this guy, he's selling it to you for 100, and little did he know that he could have, you know, fixed it up and sold it for over 200. But there, it's just a great place to mine for off-market properties.
It is. And I think that people, you know, not even necessarily, maybe they lose sight, maybe they're so broken about the house themselves, or, you know, some of those situations, I think they lived it themselves. So it was their house and they have that emotional attachment to it, which, you know, we as investors have to be real, real conscious of what's going on, you know, internally and externally. And then also, maybe they just simply don't have the means to do it. And so, you know, they can see it, but they can't execute.
That's true too. You're exactly right. That's one of the things that sets us apart sometimes, is just having the ability, the available funds to come in there and fix something like that up.
You got it. Exactly.
So Nathan, give us maybe an idea of where folks can find you. I know you're in Kansas City, you're selling turnkey properties. Do you have a website or something you could point us to?
I do. I do. You can find me on Facebook and at fixfliprentkc.com. So it's fix, just like it sounds, fixfliprentkc.com.
Cool.
And we have a full service management company. And we also have, you know, the our own portfolio and then the turnkey business as well. So
awesome. So if any of you out there are interested in some turnkey properties in Kansas City, hit Nathan up. You can check him out again. It's fixfliprentkc.com. We'll be sure to put that in the show notes as well. Nathan, man, thanks so much. I really enjoyed talking to you today.
Me too, Ken. Thanks so much for your time.
All right. We'll talk soon.
Take care.
Hey, Deal Farm podcast listeners, this is Ken Corsini reminding you to check us out online at dealfarm.net. Feel free to download our free ebook, How to Invest in Real Estate. And do not forget, we still have our free t-shirt offer going. All you have to do to get a free Deal Farm podcast t-shirt is go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. Once you've done that, go to our website, email us and let us know that you've done it. Give us your address and t-shirt size, and the t-shirt will be in the mail immediately. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode of The Deal Farm. Take care.